That Podcast Thing presents Home Movie Club, originally recorded October 2017. Episode number 14, Puny Gods.
Hello and welcome to Home Movie Club. In this episode, we are looking at 2012's The Avengers, or if you are a British slash Irish person, The Avengers Assembled, because there was a change in title due to there already being a film called The Avengers, and indeed a 1960s TV program with the same name. Directed by Joss Whedon, this was the first team-based superhero movie for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and as such has set the standard for many films to follow. As always, I am delighted to say that I am joined by Jo Carter.
Hello, I am here. I have kittens, but I'm here.
Daisy Swaffer.
Assemble.
And indeed, Sammy Kelch.
I'm sad to report that I don't have kittens, but I am present.
I have no kittens either, but I am assembled.
I have kittens.
Yes, we are the ones missing on the kittens.
Sucks to be you.
Yep.
It does a bit.
Avengers Assemble. Opening thoughts, Jo?
I realised that the only reason I know this film, like, really, really well, it's not because I've watched it multiple times, it's because I've played the damn Lego game about four times.
Oh, yes.
Because I was like, hang on a minute, I know this. Oh, wait, yeah, I played the Lego game for the competition 2 weeks ago. Ah, I remember this in Lego. This was funner in Lego.
We were watching through it going, yep, that's from Lego. Oh, there's a minikit up there. And it's like, it's a testament to how well I think the Lego game actually managed to capture the essence of the film, that when you actually watch the film, you think more of the Lego than the film itself.
Yeah, I was confused at times as to why things weren't Lego. I had this just compulsion to be participating in this scene and, like, you know, sort of smashing things back into their component bricks. And I was very confused as to why I was unable to do so.
Smash up the lab, smash everything in it, collect the Lego bricks.
Yeah, it's like we're on the shield helicarrier, and I'm like, why? Yeah. Why can't I want to smash all of the consoles these people
intact.
Are using? They won't mind.
Smash them all.
Okay, but we are concentrating on the film, not the Lego today. So, Daisy, opening thoughts?
This film is so much fun. It's just a really good fun film. Not much in the way of plot, not much in the way of character development, but my word, is it fun?
Yep, it is indeed. And Sammy, your thoughts?
Going back and watching it now in the context of subsequent sort of Marvel films and team-ups and yada yada yada, kind of feels like going back and watching Encounter at Farpoint after 7 seasons of Star Trek The Next Generation, except holy heck, this is way better than Encounter at Farpoint.
Most things are.
Yeah.
I don't know what Encounter at Farpoint is.
It's the first episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. It's, like, super extra long, and it's not very good.
Okay.
It's quite an awkward... as with many pilots on TV series, it's very awkward, and you look back at it after 7 seasons, and as Sammy said, it does not stack up well.
Yeah.
But then, to be honest, it didn't stack up well on the first viewing either. So.
It's like watching the first Star Trek film, like... And actually falling asleep.
the Star Trek, the slow motion picture.
Yeah, I like the slow motion picture. What I'm trying to say about this film is that it feels like the pilot episode of a subsequent series of adventures.
But it also feels like there have been, like, prequels before that you're expected to know about, because it references things that don't happen in the film.
This was actually one of my first thoughts, was that actually, although it is... the first of the Avengers films, it does rely quite a lot on the backstory of the other preceding films. So Thor, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, the Incredible Hulk films to an extent.
Captain America.
Captain America, obviously, yes, sorry. However, I thought it actually fairly well tread the line between having to explain everything that was going on and making it so that it didn't really matter. You'd still enjoy it anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you really did need to know. I mean, sure, it enriched the experience, but I don't think you lose, because there's not that much plot in this, so I don't think there's really anything that you need to know for the plot of this movie.
Yeah, genuinely, the plot sort of storyline of this is fairly basic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing, necessarily.
Yeah.
I don't disagree. It's just they do reference stuff, and I'm like, huh. I'm expected to
I
remember
I saw those
that.
As more kind of a nod and a wink, if you remember that
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, almost
happened.
Easter egg sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they kind of exposition shorthand a lot of stuff that you would kind of need to know about, but not in great detail.
Yeah, but as you said, not a lot of plot. But what there is, let's get into it. So, as with all good films, it starts with a narration. We have the other, as it turns out, which is a Chitauri leader. Again, you'll find out who all these things are later on, or not. It doesn't really explain some of it. Talking about the Tesseract. So again, this is sort of an exposition dump that explains what the Tesseract is, who Loki is, what's going on, just in case you haven't seen those previous films. It's reasonably concise. It doesn't really take you out of the film at the very start. So, and you don't feel like you've not got a clue what's going on if you don't fully pay attention. So we do that, and then we switch to...
Fun fact. The name Chitauri originates from Zulu mythology and is used to describe a serpent race from the sky.
Ooh.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Daisy.
I don't know whether the Chitauri were invented specifically for this film or whether
they
were. No,
they
weren't.
Existing... They were already. Mark Miller had used them in the Ultimates comic series previously.
Because I know traditionally it would have been the Skree, but obviously we don't have rights.
You mean the Kree?
Yeah, the Kree, they would have had rights, but Joss Whedon didn't want to use shapeshifters, so he didn't use them.
Okay. So, yes, we have the Chitauri telling us what's going on, really. We switch to a scene of a large NASA/SHIELD facility where Nick Fury has landed in his helicopter and goes to talk to people. This, again, is actually a NASA facility that they just stuck some SHIELD logos on.
Oh, cool.
Nice.
I don't know how it's supposed to be secret if... I'm not in any way, shape, or form accusing NASA of being unable to keep secrets. But if it's a joint NASA/SHIELD building, it can't be that secure because the people who work in NASA are just scientists. They're not, you know, they're not super secret agents.
When did they say it was NASA?
The signage on the building is NASA/SHIELD.
Oh, okay.
And I think that was done literally because it is a NASA building and they wanted to acknowledge the fact that they were using a NASA building.
Yeah.
Because it was the only place they could find that actually had that sort of space and shape that worked for the film.
That makes Ooh. Sense.
So, I mean, I'm assuming that...
Fun fact.
The outside shots of all the dishes and that were, you know, entirely CG, but the internals was actually a NASA facility.
No, the outside shot with all the dishes and that was in New Mexico, the same place they did the, you know, you remember the Jodie Foster movie Contact?
Contact, yeah.
That was those dishes.
So again, that's probably the same place then. So yes, we have Nick Fury landing in this facility in the middle of an evacuation because apparently the Tesseract, the cube we heard earlier, was misbehaving.
It turned itself
which is how
on.
They described it.
Oh my god.
It turned itself off.
But note, it was she is misbehaving.
Yeah, Selvig was definitely giving it a female pronoun, and I'm not quite sure why that was.
Because Whedon. Sorry.
Possibly. Yes, quite possibly. So the Tesseract apparently is misbehaving, and then suddenly it spikes in energy, a blue light appears, and there's a portal formed at the end of this long, conveniently shaped building.
Just after Hawkeye has been saying, well, this is a doorway, so, you know, maybe they're doing something on the other side. And then, ta-da, doorway happens.
So, suddenly doorway appears. Yeah. And
it's like, Hawkeye, you jinxed it.
Yeah, so the portal dissipates and there we have Loki, played by Tom Hiddleston. Mm.
With the scepter that we saw getting dished out to mysterious we can't see who just like 5 minutes ago, and it's like, well, I'm not sure you really needed to keep that much of a secret since we then see it straight away in the first scene.
It did seem a little unnecessary, yes. So yes, Loki arrives.
I am Loki of Asgard and I am burdened with glorious purpose. Oh, it's such a lovely line that it's just like, yes, I am the most arrogant person you can possibly conceive.
Seriously, that's
I am
that's
obviously
so douchey.
Evil because I am British.
An ant has no quarrel with a boot.
I did actually like that line. That was a good line.
Full on Shakespearean mode to an extent. Yeah, so Loki attacks the facility. He kills a couple of the security guards and the scientists. So that's the start of our body count. And then some reason that is never fully explained uses the staff to mind control both Clint Barton, so Hawkeye, Eric Selvig, the physicist, and some random agent dude.
A and other
that is never seen again, and no one seems to care about the fact he's been taken over and disappears.
And then he shoots Nick Fury, but then, like, we never really get, you know, any kind of consequence to the fact that Nick Fury got shot.
No, Hawkeye shoots Nick Fury, but also Hawkeye shoots Nick Fury in the chest, and he must know that he was wearing a bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
So there is I've seen arguments being made that actually he may not have been fully under Loki's control, because otherwise he'd have just shot him in the other eye, and that would have been it.
Well, that makes sense, because Selvig also wasn't 100% under control as well. Yeah, with the whole scepter thing.
Because he built in the failsafe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the way that mind control goes through the heart.
Yes, again, and that makes no sense either, but it gives them an option.
It's just a beautiful thing.
It just gives them the option to do things later that we'll get to with Tony Stark.
Yeah,
because he has no heart.
He has no heart. So they shoot Fury and grab hold of the cube and disappear off in a 4x4. We've got Fury escaping in his helicopter. We've got Maria Hill following them and then chasing them in a car.
I loved her driving. Her driving was fantastic. I'm really glad that they gave that to, you know, a female character.
Yeah. The portal has collapsed, and in doing so has basically weakened the building to the point where it is now collapsing around everybody's ears as well. So Fury escapes in his helicopter. Maria Hill actually gets trapped in the rubble as the building collapses. Agent Coulson, who we saw briefly, is able to escape in a lorry. And Fury then catches up with the escaping Loki 4x4, but is then shot down by Loki's scepter, killing the helicopter pilot. Again, no one seems to be that bothered about that. It's just an extra.
Yeah, no, it's only an extra. Who cares?
Yeah. Then calls Coulson and says, at this point, it's a level 7 and we are now at war. And Coulson goes, what should we do? And at this point in the English edition, the screen fades to black and it says, Avengers Assemble, which
always
makes sense because that's what they're doing. But in the American version, because it's just called The Avengers, I don't know if that would have that same amount of impact.
I wondered that when it came up as well, because it was very much, what should we do? Avengers Assemble. Yes, and that's what this movie will be. Whereas, I felt, how did they do that differently for the American release? Was there another
No, it's the same. I have seen the American version. It is the same. It's just literally the Avengers come up.
It's a shame they didn't just call it Avengers Assemble everywhere.
Mm.
Yeah.
That would have made sense.
Yeah. I mean, they then went on to create a kids' cartoon about this, or sort of following on from this. And that was called Avengers Assemble. So, that just adds more confusion to the mix, I think. So we have the title card, and then we switch to Russia.
My favourite scene in the entire movie.
We see Natasha Romanoff, so the Black Widow, tied to a chair, and being threatened by a military general or something, Russian military gentleman, who's obviously also working as a crime boss, threatens to cause harm to Black Widow.
He is a bad person.
Just as he's threatening her, there is a phone call. You should always turn your phone off when at work, I feel.
Well, they set it on vibrate.
So they answer the phone, and it's Agent Coulson's sultry tones down the line.
He's got a nice voice.
Telling them that they have to put Natasha on the phone or they will blow the building up, which seems a bit self-defeating, but, you know, there you go.
It was an empty threat.
It was an empty threat, but it worked. So they put Natasha on the phone. Natasha's told that Clint Barton has been turned and that she has to come in.
Well, first of all, she's like, no, I'm not going to come in now. I'm in the middle of an interrogation. These idiots are telling me everything. And it's
I love that bit. It's so cute.
She's brilliant.
Yeah.
But then, as soon as she learns that Clint's in trouble, it's like, okay, right, give me a minute. I'll put you on hold.
Yeah, she is just epic. I really wish they'd have done her movie, like a solo movie.
So we end up with a situation where Natasha breaks free of the chair she's bound on. She beats the living stuffing out of all of the goons. hangs the crime lord up by his leg over a big pit, and then picks up her high heel shoes and walks off. She's about to go back to S.H.I.E.L.D. when she's told she has to go and talk to the big guy, which initially she thinks means Tony Stark. And again, this is one of those points that points back to Iron Man 2. Which unfortunately was not a great movie. But no, she needs to go and speak to Bruce Banner, the big guy being, of course, the Hulk.
Yay!
And then we switch to Calcutta in India. We see Dr. Bruce Banner working as a doctor, which is odd because I wasn't aware he was actually a physician. He was just a physicist.
Oh, it's one of those things in movies, though, isn't it? When, you know, like, you have a character who's very smart, so they somehow have, like, 12 doctorates in disparate scientific fields, which makes no sense. Like, would take years to do. And let's be real, it's just... You can't have that much of a generalist knowledge of that many different types of science. It just, no.
Well, maybe he just, you know, with everything that had happened in the previous Hulk film, he really just wanted to help people. And so he learnt some kind of rudimentary medicine and went somewhere where rudimentary medicine would mean something.
Yep. So he's seen helping a family of sick people. A young girl bursts in and asks for his help because her father's ill. She leads him across town to the outskirts of town where she runs into the building, he follows her, and as she runs into the back room and then out the window and away.
She was convincing. You know, like the first time I watched it, I believed her. I didn't doubt her for a second.
No, she was good. And then obviously he's like, ugh, I should have got paid up front. And then Natasha walks in and expositions. I was about to say Natasha walks in and exposes everything, but that just is wrong.
Oh, babe, no.
Natasha walks in and there's some more exposition about the cube and how Nick Fury wants to recruit Banner as a scientist to actually search for the cube because the cube gives off sort of a specific gamma radiation trace that he should be able to...
He was turned into the Hulk with gamma rays, therefore he must be a living gamma radiation radar.
I think it's more the fact that he was very experienced with gamma radiation, which is why he used that whilst turning himself into the Hulk, because he shouldn't have done that. But I'll confess, I have seen the Ang Lee Hulk film, which is what I think happens in that. But I can't remember it at all, because that really wasn't a good film.
That the Ed Norton one, yeah?
It's the first one of the two, so it's not Ed Norton, it's the other guy.
That one's not part of the Marvel Eric Cinematic Banner. Universe.
So Eric Banner's one doesn't count, but
that
Ed
one
Norton's
count,
one
but the
does.
The Ed Norton one does. The Ed Norton one is in the official continuity.
Because it was in the box set
that I got. That is definitely the better film.
Yes, it is, yeah. And they asked Ed to come back for this, but he didn't want to because he felt that the character development was kind of just rehashing all over again.
Yeah, and I think he actually suggested Mark Ruffalo. So.
Yeah, they're friends.
Well done,
so, yeah,
buddy.
He very much like handed the baton over to him.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you're now going, oh, I could have made so much money out of this.
I don't think Ed Norton's particularly poor.
I'm sure he's doing just fine for himself. He's a very talented man, and yeah, he's going places.
So Black Widow manages to convince the Hulk, or rather convince Banner to join them. And then we switch to a Skype call. Hurrah! Between a shadowy world council, and it's never really explained who these people are or what they do.
They have really poor lighting, all of them.
They do. They obviously, none of them can afford a decent light bulb because they're all in this shadowy kind of backlit, impossible to see their faces.
But it's not impossible to see their faces. You can see their faces. So if what they're trying to do is entirely obscure what they look like, they're failing at doing that. And yet they're really poorly lit. So it's just like you need to commit one way or the other here. Either you're on a video call and you want to be able to be seen, or why are you even on a video call?
They're
attempting,
you know, sort of a comic book visual cliche because they think it's cool. That's the end of it.
So yes, there's a World Council meeting where Nick Fury tries to convince them that the only way they can handle the Loki situation is by reforming the Avengers Initiative. They're not overly keen on this, but they do. They don't approve, but they agree that it is certainly an option they should pursue.
I think they're pretty much feeling like, well, Fury's going to do this anyway, so we may as well kind of agree.
So Fury goes and visits Steve Rogers.
Yay.
In a gym.
Yay.
Late at night.
That's my boy.
We get a rehash of the end sequence that we saw at the end of Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yeah, we get like a few flashbacks, and that's all we need to remind us as to who he is and what's going on with him.
We get a clear indication from that he's going through some stuff right now.
He's readjusting,
None of which is ever addressed again in this film.
Yeah, they had a lot of stuff of him being kind of out of place in modern society, and they cut it all out because the film was too long, so yeah.
So he visits Fury visits Steve Rogers, and they talk about the Tesseract, which Steve Rogers knows about because it was the main weapon used by Hydra in Captain America: First Avenger. They explain that the Tesseract was found by Howard Stark, who is Tony Stark's dad, whilst looking for Steve Rogers. But Steve says they should have left it in the ocean.
He was also Howard Stark, also being the dude who turned him into Captain America.
Yes,
with a fine mustache.
Oh,
with a very fine mustache.
What a wonderful
mustache. Steve Rogers says that they should have left the cube in the ocean. Switch to a picture of the ocean. Hurrah! A lot of this seems to work in that way. You segue out, because in the end of the last scene with the council, they said they need something about soldiers, and we switched to Captain America, who is the soldier.
Yep.
And then they go from Captain America to Iron Man with a mention of oceans.
I liked the way that when Nick Fury was getting Cap on board with this, he kind of used a bit of the right motivation on him, because Cap's all about like being good and right and proper and things, so he's like, well, you know, renewable energy, that's what we need it for, renewable energy,
honestly,
get you on board. Yep gotcha, great.
Yep. So they switch
not to... weaponizing it, honest.
No, they switch to Iron Man, who is underwater and messing with some power lines, assuming he once belonging to the cities, but no one seems to mind about that. I assume it's the Hudson River. It might be the East River. Who knows? We don't really get to see
it. It's water.
But he opens up and affixes a device to the power cables, and then flies off and flies back towards Stark Tower.
Yay!
And the whole point of this is that they are turning Stark Tower off the grid and powering it all with a experimental arc reactor, the same device that is used to power Tony's suits, to make it self-sufficient, and probably is a huge tax break. So yes, they turn off the grid and they turn on the arc reactor, making the building self-sufficient.
Not before Tony's done his super funky thing where he lands and then all the disc thing comes around and it all takes his suit off piece by piece in his super
Yes, they've gotten rid of the slightly laborious turning, sort of the suit being taken off piece by piece in a sort of thing. And you can now just walk forward and have the suit basically be stripped
it's
off.
It's like him. A so catwalk cool. thing.
Yeah. I loved that. I was like, yes, that's the kind of thing that Tony Stark would spend time and work actually achieving, because he likes the flashy things.
He does. Yep. He likes shiny
So he goes stuff. And speaks to Pepper Potts, who is at this point his better half. So they're about to have a nice night together to celebrate the finishing of the building, when Coulson rings them and then interrupts their evening with a package for Stark with information about the Avengers Initiative, which I thought Tony already knew about, but there we go. I guess he brings the audience up to speed.
I think the best bit here was the fact that he didn't want to answer the phone and he tried every way to not answer the phone and pretend he wasn't there. It was very immature of him.
Other than just not picking it up and not answering it.
I don't know.
Like,
I feel
just let it ring.
When's the last time that I answered the phone to anyone who was not my spouse? I mean, that's kind of relatable to me.
Just stick it on silent. Just, you know, ignore it.
Yeah, but he knew that it would, you know, like, Pepper would make him answer it if he didn't, so.
And to be fair, Coulson would probably just end up knocking at the door if he didn't answer the phone, so.
Which he did anyway.
As we saw, he was in the lift on the way up anyway, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Coulson hands the information to Pepper, who then hands it to Tony Stark, because Tony doesn't like things being handed to him. Again, we saw that in Iron Man 2. Pepper decides to fly back to DC because she needs to do more work on the zoning for other three buildings and equally needs to be not in the rest of this film very much. And Tony sits and starts doing his homework.
Which he does, because later on he knows all the stuff and he's like, did no one else do the homework? Yeah. So yeah, he did. He did his homework.
Despite his character flaws, he is very intelligent.
Yeah. He went to MIT. He's a good student.
I always do the homework. Well.
Good for you.
I try and always do the homework.
Good for you, kind of.
We then see Captain America and Agent Coulson on a Quinjet flying towards the carrier.
Coulson is adorably fanboying Cap.
Yeah.
He's so cute.
I watched you while you were sleeping. I mean, oh.
Yeah, creepy slash.
Yes. We've all been there.
Yep.
No. So after Coulson fanboying over Captain America, we see Loki in his hideout with lots of guards running around for no apparent reason. Apparently, that's how you keep guards on high alert, is by making them run everywhere and wearing them out in case something happens.
Fun.
Yeah.
He might be a supervillain, but he's not necessarily a great supervillain.
No.
Whoa.
No. But he goes into a trance and
burn.
Wow. He goes into a trance and meets up with the other to discuss their plans and to promise that if he gets control of the Chitauri army, that he will deliver the Tesseract to the other and the other's master, who at this point we don't know who he is.
Mystery thing.
Mystery person. We then go back to the helicarrier. We have Romanoff and Bruce Banner meeting them as they get off. Coulson gets rushed to the bridge, and Romanoff says that both Captain and Banner should get inside because it's going to be difficult to breathe soon, which makes them think that they're on a submarine, which seems like a great idea, as Bruce Banner says, they want him in a sealed metal container. But no, it's not a submarine. It's, dun-dun-dun, a flying ship.
Helicarrier, yay!
Because why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
So it looks fantastic,
it's awesome.
But it's the sort of thing that looks great, but then you actually look at it and it's all of its flaws are visible within the one movie.
No, shush, it's awesome!
So yes, the helicarrier takes off in one of the finest bits of music within the film.
And it has awesome cloaking!
And then vanishes for no obvious reason.
Yay! Because it's awesome! Because it's showing us that it's awesome!
Okay, calm.
But the thing with that is that they make it invisible and then they fly off. But at no point after that do they make it invisible. Every time we see it later on, it's fully visible. It just seems to be, it's a nice effect and they put it in there for its own sake, but doesn't seem to achieve anything.
Well, you don't know what would have happened if at that point they hadn't have made it invisible.
Fair enough. So we have more Fury exposition and we have Banner going off to start looking for the cube. We switch back to Selvig, Barton and Loki, who are examining the cube and trying to construct a device. Selvig said that he needs iridium, and Barton knows where to get some from a SHIELD facility, but to get in, he needs an eyeball and a distraction.
Ew.
Yeah.
But they don't use the actual... I thought they did that nicely. They could have got the actual person's eyeball, but they didn't, so...
I think they would have to get the eyeball from Germany and then somehow get it from Germany to wherever this facility was in England.
Yeah.
Or America, rather.
It might have been just done for speed, but they still, you know, they could have removed the eyeball from the person and
they could have done it in a much more grotesque manner than they do.
Yeah.
I got the impression from the way the guy was sort of squirming and screaming out that he probably was having his eyeball removed, but this is a film for kids, so...
No, they were just scanning it. It was nice. They were being very nice. No one got killed in that entire sequence.
There are a lot of bits of this movie where no one actually dies. It's great.
I've got the body cam for the end, but yeah, no one got killed in that bit.
Yeah, so we have Barton going to a facility, but needs an ID to get in. They have S.H.I.E.L.D. running a... This was another thing that got me, was like, they were accessing every wirelessly accessible camera on the planet.
Yeah.
So if it's a laptop or a phone or something, we'll have him.
Yeah.
And then they show us a shot of Tom Hiddleston basically walking around in a crowd and looking at cameras. It's like that, you know, he was looking at the cameras and smiling. I mean, I know he was trying to be found.
He was wanting to get found, so yeah. He was deliberately doing that. He was making a spectacle. He was being as super noisy as he could.
Yeah. So he makes his way into the whatever. I don't actually, can't remember if it said what the posh soiree was.
Probably an opera. Was in,
yeah, something like that. Although it looked more like, I don't know, it was an auction or something like that. But there's a posh soiree and there is a German scientist there, or a scientist who is there who they need to get the eyeball of. So they sort of attack a few people. Loki throws the gentleman onto a conveniently positioned statue with a nice flat top to it and extracts his eyeball, or at least extracts the image of the eyeball, which Barton then uses to open up the locks on the facility to access the Iridium.
Ew. The kind of swaggering down the stairs and then whacking someone with his stick and throwing someone onto this statue thing. It all felt a bit Clockwork Orange to me.
Yeah, there was a definite swagger and there was a definite kind of...
The music was playing. And yeah, that whole kind of... The way that he was doing it in that scene felt very Clockwork Orange style to me.
As we said, Loki was looking to be found. And so when Captain America turns up, he is outside commanding all of the people who rushed out of the opera house to kneel before
him. Yes!
And then one elderly gentleman with a German accent stands up and says, no, he won't kneel to people like Loki. So Loki turns to shoot him. But as he shoots him, Captain America conveniently lands and directs the blast away from the old person and back at Loki, knocking Loki backwards.
And then he does a speech about how the last time he was in Germany and someone was standing up above everyone else, then it didn't end very well for that guy.
Yeah.
It was very cheesy.
So cheesy. This is like the height of Captain Cheese America.
Yeah.
Are you trying to tell me that, are we trying to get the impression here that he might have been fighting Nazis or something? I don't know. That wasn't clear to me. It was very vague. Oh, wait. No, it wasn't. So Captain America confronts and fights Loki. We have a sort of the Quinjet arrives with Romanoff in there. Who's flying the Quinjet at that point?
Extra.
Natasha?
Is it just a random extra? Because Natasha... I've just realised that Natasha later on says she can't fly the Quinjets because that's why they get Clint to do it.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was her flying it there. She never says that she can't. It's just that in that scene, Clint comes through the door and says, I can... She never says that she can't.
Although I think there is another random extra pilot person in there as well with her.
Probably.
So she is trying to shoot at Loki with a large autocannon, despite the fact that, you know, there's lots of people milling around.
Swear
so again, not overly, questionable tactics there. Well done, Black Widow.
Don't hit the civilians.
Try not to hit the civilians, certainly.
So she didn't. See, wisely, she did not shoot the ridiculous guns into the load of people.
So the Quinjet is there, and then suddenly the PA speakers, which obviously all large American-built fighter aircraft have, a large PA system, starts playing AC/DC's Shoot to Kill.
Oh, is that what it is that plays?
Yes.
As it's sort of, it's the AC/DC thing is a signature sort of thing for Tony Stark and Iron
Man.
That's
a very Stark thing to do.
Despite the fact he always seems to be wearing Black Sabbath t-shirts and not AC/DC t-shirts.
Well, Black Sabbath did the Iron Man song, didn't they? So that's
his whole jam. Yes, which they did play at the end of the
Black Sabbath t-shirts, because he's like, I'm Iron Man even when I'm not Iron Man. Look at my rock and roll reference to the fact that I'm Iron Man even when I'm not being Iron Man.
Also, I don't think there's many sort of Black Sabbath songs that would fit into this sort of thing, because... Even Iron Man, which is a great song, is quite slow and sort of, it's very early metal.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Yes, it is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, so Iron Man arrives in a fanfare of AC/DC and for some reason Loki just surrenders to him, almost as if he wanted to be captured.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a very mild tussle first with some cars suffering some damage, but no people were hurt in this scene.
And those cars are probably insured.
And one of those CGI. Cars, when Loki blasts it with the scepter, and it kind of shoots down the street, you know, like on its front end. Yep. That was a mistake. It was actually meant to flip all the way, but in the special effects, you know, when they were filming it, it didn't. But it looked really cool, so they kept it as the same shot.
Nice.
Fair enough.
Fun fact.
So they bundle Loki into the back of the Quinjet and all fly back towards the carrier. On the flight back, they suddenly experience thunder and lightning.
Very, very frightening. What could that mean?
Yep.
It frightens Loki anyway, or it.
Loki looks very worried about the thought of thunder and lightning because he knows what's coming next.
Don't you like lightning? It's what comes next that I don't like.
Yep, and then suddenly there's a thump on the outside of the craft, and Thor appears, brother of Loki, who steals away with Loki and flies off.
Even though there's no Bifrost to get him there, and they never really explain how all that happened.
There was something about the old father must have used a lot of energy to get you here.
There was
a line that says the old father must use a lot of dark energy to get you here, but it is sort of the end of Thor when they destroyed the Bifrost. The impression gave was that there was no way that he could come back.
Exactly.
If it's he can come back, there's no way you can come back unless it's convenient for the plot. Doesn't seem to work quite as well.
Yeah. But it's fine. It's just like, he's there. Don't worry about it. He's part of the Avengers. Yeah. So, the power of plot got him from Asgard.
We have a scene of Thor and Loki discussing the events of the first Thor film to an extent and just explaining that although Loki is an Asgardian, he's not actually Thor's brother and things like that.
So one thing bugged me in this scene. It's Thor and Loki talking to each other and there's no one else around. And yet, both of them are referring to it as Earth rather than Midgard.
Yeah,
I didn't understand why they were. I could understand if there were, you know, other people from Earth around and they didn't want to be condescending, although that doesn't seem very them either.
Yeah.
Why would they not be calling it Midgard? I don't get it.
Yeah, no, I agree. That is, does seem a little bit of an oversight. But again, probably stops them having to explain what Midgard is and going through the whole thing again. But then we end up with this situation. This is the one scene in this film that really, really annoys me.
Okay.
Is that Loki and Thor are fighting, and then Iron Man comes in and starts fighting with Thor. For no obvious reason.
Because drama and special
effects.
Because
they need to protect Loki because they need information from him.
Yeah, but it's just none of it. It's basically one big, you know, contest, and I'll have to beep that out.
Well, yeah, the lot of the stuff in this film is a nice excuse to get different members of the Avengers to fight each other, and that's part of the fun for me. Like, who's gonna win between them? Yeah, I like that.
You know, the thing about that for me is that there is a lot of sort of physical and verbal sparring between the various characters. And part of that for me comes down to sort of watching it now. Watching it now, having seen all of the movies that came between now and you know, sort of this one and the forthcoming Infinity thing. It's just like these most of these people don't really seem like they're, I mean, a lot of them are just meeting each other now, but most of them don't really seem like they even get along, let alone they're like friends. And we kind of came out of it being like, yeah, super friend team. And it's like, no, they don't, like half of these people don't like each other.
Yeah.
They're all very much individuals. They're not people who would typically fight as part of a team.
They're not a team, full stop.
Yeah. So, and I like that about them. I think that gives them a far more interesting dynamic than just, hey, let's fight on a team. Okay.
Yeah, true. I don't know. This just seen the fight between Thor and Iron Man just always struck me as a bit
stupid.
Yeah. Stupid, yeah.
Well, what's stupid is the fact that Loki hangs around and just lets himself get recaptured and none of them go,
but then again, that's what he wants, isn't it?
I mean,
he wants to be captured. So, you know, didn't just leave at that point while they're distracted by fighting amongst each other.
That would have been more believable
if he wanted to escape. If he wanted to escape, then that would have been the perfect opportunity to do so because these two are having a contest.
Yeah.
I mean, it is mentioned later on that it's basically, it feels like Luke is the only person who wants to be on the helicarrier.
Yeah, that was it. That was a good, accurate line.
Luke is taken to the helicarrier and put into a big cell that is suspiciously looks like it's Hulk-proof.
It's even coloured green.
And whilst Fury talks to Loki, you see Romanoff and Thor and Captain America all sitting around a table and Iron Man sitting around a table listening to what he's saying. And Loki goads them about having unlimited power and having the scepter but not being able to use it. Pointedly stares at the camera while he says it because subtlety is not this guy's strong point, obviously.
Yeah.
Then we see the rest of them around the conference taking, talking. Loki is described as being a mind like a bag of cats by Bruce Banner. Again, apparently his doctorate includes psychology. Thor defends him, saying that he might be mad, but he's still from Asgard and he's still his brother. Until Romanoff says that he's killed 80 people in the last 2 days.
Yeah,
I think that was the number.
It was 80, yeah. The Banner specifically says that you can smell crazy on him, and the reason that line was in was because originally when Hulk comes across Loki at Stark Tower at the end of the movie, there was meant to be like a whole load of different, you know, Loki decoys, and Hulk could tell which was the real Loki because he could smell him.
That was in the game, the Lego game.
That was in the Lego game, yes.
Ah, there you go. So that's why they, I can smell crazy on him lines in there.
Thor defending Loki until it's pointed out how many people Loki has killed in the last 2 days, at which point he admits that Loki is adopted. And I think a lot of people seem to take offense at that line.
It was offensive.
Possibly not when they realised that actually he was adopted and this is actually just truth. This is just a...
Yes, but up until then it was like, you know, Asgardians, brothers and whatever, until, you know, he did something distasteful and then it's like, oh no, I don't know that person type situation. Yeah,
that's like how a Scottish athlete is British until they don't win and then they're Scottish.
Yes, it is exactly like that.
Stark and Banner discuss the...
They science geek out. That's what they do. They science geek out.
Stark and Banner have a science bonding moment over Loki's scepter and discuss what seems to be going on.
So, fun fact, in this scene in the lab, Robert Downey Jr. Was quite hungry. So he hid food all around that set. So whenever he's eating in this scene, that's not scripted. That's not part of anything that's meant to be. That's just Robert Downey Jr.'s hungry and he's hidden food in there. So he's like, grab the food, start eating the food, offer the food. This is my food. And just playing it completely in character.
I love that because it does seem like something that Stark would do to just have like snacks stashed everywhere so he can just, so he doesn't have to stop and go like make a sandwich. You know, when he's working, he can just be like, oh yeah, my emergency supply of almonds is in here. Nom nom nom.
Yeah.
That is such a
thing. Like the way
he
offered a blueberry to Banner as almost a reward you would give to a pet when you got the right answer.
Oh, yeah, that was cheeky.
Yeah. So they're discussing Loki's plans and they are talking to Steve, who is saying that, you know, Nick Fury can't be a bad person. He works for S.H.I.E.L.D. He must be a good person, which kind of shows his slight naive points at this time. However, they convince Steve that actually something's going wrong, something's happening. Tony is decrypting the entire S.H.I.E.L.D. database, and so when that is complete, they will have their answers. But Steve decides to go off and do his own thing and goes to look at what is hidden in some of the slightly, well, less lit areas of the helicarrier.
Which is weapons that look like they're powered from Tesseract power and have the Hydra symbol on them.
Oh no!
Oh no! You can see why Steve is, I think, justifiably cheesed off throughout basically this entire movie. Like in his mind, basically 2 weeks ago, he was busy, you know, sort of like fighting bad guys doing this bad business. And then they're like, oh yeah, no, we brought that back because we think it's going to be super useful. And he's like, you are so dumb! Do you not learn anything from your own history? You people are so stupid. I can see why he's, you know, kind of cheesed off in this movie.
Yeah, it's like,
and I think Chris Evans plays that anger really, really well. There's a lot about sort of like Steve's characterization that I'm a bit about in this movie and sort of making him seem really old fashioned and stuff. But in terms of just that anger, he nails it.
Yeah.
We then get a slightly controversial scene where Loki is visited by Black Widow, who, again, using the same tactics used in Russia, gets information out of Loki about what his plan is.
Because she's awesome.
With a phrase that Loki calls her that I won't repeat on this.
Because I don't like it.
Because certain people don't like it, and
you're
it
not
is.
Supposed to. He's saying something really horrid to her because he's trying to break her.
We see that actually Loki's plan is to get the Avengers or the Proto Avengers, because they're not there yet, to fight among themselves and to have Hulk basically destroy everything because they want Banner to turn into the Hulk and break things.
Yeah, and the staff at this point is flaring behind them when they're all arguing, isn't it?
Yeah, there is. Well, there's a slight section before that, which is where we see a Quinjet approaching the carrier, and the back door opens, and Barton, with his assault squad, basically fires a trick splody arrow at the helicarrier
that
curves around.
Yay.
Curves around a lot and then sticks itself to the side of the engine compartment, because obviously Clint Barton is the world's best archer.
Yes.
He's great. He's so good at what he does and I love him.
He also shoots both left-handed and right-handed at various points during this movie because he is the world's best archer.
Yeah, as I said, tensions are rising in the science area because A, Tony's program decrypts and they find out that there is a phase two, and then we have Steve walking in with the Hydra weapon. This starts them all arguing and fighting amongst themselves.
Bickering.
Meanwhile, as we say, we have a shot where the camera moves towards the scepter and then flips over 180 degrees around to the top. So you're looking at all the other characters, but you're looking at them upside down, which is a slightly weird shot, but it does kind of convey meaning in some ways.
I mean, I took that as, hey, just in case you hadn't realised that it's the scepter's influence here, then, hey, it's the scepter's influence here.
Yeah, yep. I mean, I can see that. I just don't know why they ended up with the shot being upside down. That
so
was
that
the bit
you
that was slightly.
You couldn't still be distracted by the characters and you had to pay attention to the scepter in the foreground.
Yeah.
Also, it's artsy.
Yeah.
Mm.
They question Nick Fury about why they are building Hydra weapons, and Nick Fury says that it's in defense of Thor and Thor-like people, because although Asgardians are only peaceful, they're not the only aliens out there, as we will see later on in other Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
And this one.
There's a lot.
Indeed, yes, the end of this movie.
And indeed, the end of this one, but there is a big range of alien beings out there that at this point they know nothing about.
There's a lot of fancy business happening up in all that space, is what. Is
yep,
what
so they're arguing, they're bickering amongst themselves. Bruce picks up the scepter, and they're just about to kick off big time when the computer console starts beeping and they realize that they found where the Tesseract is.
So Banner gets to see where that was before the explosion, but he doesn't get a chance to say to anyone where.
Yes, and I'm not quite sure where that was supposed to be.
But they also get the thing where they go, Bruce, put down the scepter, and then...
Yeah.
Well, presumably it shows it as New York, because otherwise there's absolutely no reason that Banner would have rocked up in New York when he did later on in the movie. So
yeah.
He will have seen at that point it was New York, and then, yeah.
I was never sure if it was showing as being in New York, or whether actually it was with... Clint Barton on the helicarrier, and the reason they were going, oh no, is because it was like next door to them. So, because that's kind of what I got, but that would make no sense to the being the location of the actual cube, so I don't know. But anyway, the tensions are starting. Banner manages to see where the cube is located, but before they can do anything, bang! Splody arrow goes splode. And
yay,
the engine blows
arrow.
Up. They end up... Stark and Captain America rush to don their respective kinky outfits, and we see Black Widow and Bruce Banner blown through a window and down into the deck below, which probably would, if not kill them, then certainly seriously injure them, but apparently it doesn't.
Not when you're a superhero.
No. So Natasha gets trapped with a foot trapped between two pipes as Bruce starts to...
Hulk out!
Go green, and yes, turn into the Hulk.
No.
Yay! Me.
And this is the one thing that we have seen that Natasha is terrified of, because we saw that in an earlier scene, that the threat of him turning into the Hulk was sort of really showed dread in her eyes. So he turns into the Hulk. She manages to free herself, but starts running through the helicarrier with the Hulk behind her, chasing her and smashing things up. It looks like he's about to kill her when whammo, and that's not quite in letters in the screen, but it's not far off. Thor flies in and attacks the Hulk.
Have a meat Hulk.
Saving, yeah. So they have a big fight where they break lots of things, and I did think it was quite amusing. The hammer is thrown at the Hulk, and the Hulk tries to catch it and gets thrown back because he can't. But I did wonder at that point whether they should have had it so that he picks the hammer up at that point, because that would have been hilarious.
But he tries to pick it up later on and can't.
And can't. Yeah. Yes, no, this is why I think they should make the Hulk worthy of picking up the hammer.
No.
That makes no sense.
No.
No, we all know that in terms of worthiness of picking up the hammer, the worthiest person in the entire Marvel Universe, though we haven't actually seen him in the cinematic universe yet, is Lucky the Pizza Dog from the Hawkeye comics.
There you go. Yeah.
It just walks around with it in his mouth. Just,
absolutely. You know, it just trots up to Thor, boom, plonks it on the ground, throw it again! And Thor's just like,
That's hilarious.
Good boy.
So we have Hulk and Thor fighting. In an attempt to distract the Hulk, they send a jet in and the jet attacks as well.
Target engaged. Target angry!
Yeah, so they engage with the cannons, and then the Hulk jumps out of the back of the helicarrier, lands on the attacking fighter jet, and rips its wing off and gets thrown to the ground. The pilot manages to eject, so that's not one to the body count.
I like the way that the Hulk caught the ejector seat as it ejected out, though, and then kind of held it for a second and then decided this wasn't a fun toy and then lobbed it.
Yeah. So that conveniently gets the Hulk off the helicarrier. Barton goes and frees Loki, then Loki stands in the doorway, or pretends to stand in the doorway, whilst Thor then rushes in and traps himself in the cage.
You see, in order to be worthy to carry the hammer, you have to be dumb. How many as times Loki says, is he going to fall for this same trick?
As Loki says, are you never going to not fall for that?
Seriously, dude. Seriously, this is not a new thing. Stop falling for it every time.
Loki threatens, and indeed does, prep the cell so that it will drop out of the helicarrier and kill Thor, or at least seriously damage Thor. However, while he's doing this, Coulson turns up and threatens to shoot Loki with a gun developed from the technology left behind by the Destroyer.
While all this is happening as well, though, Clint Barton is fighting Natasha Romanoff elsewhere on the decks.
Sad faces, they're best friends.
Yeah.
For information on the Destroyer, see Thor, first one, because that's where that comes from. However, it turns out that even this is an illusion of Loki, and Loki is behind Coulson and stabs him to death.
With the thing that they cut out. That you used to have the scepter going through the front of Coulson there on the UK cinema screens. They didn't have that on the US cinema screens to get the PG-13 rating, but we had it in the UK cinemas, but when it came to DVD here, they'd removed it, like the American one.
Boo hiss.
Yeah,
which, you know, then, because then you're left going, well, did that go, what did he actually do? Whereas
did he just like punch him in the back or something?
Whereas when you see the scepter coming out the front of him, it's like, oh, I see. Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Loki manages to kill Coulson, and Coulson stays dead forever.
Spoilers for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Even in the rest of this, he stays alive for quite a while.
Even though I know Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that jazz, I still get super sad in this because he's so sweet.
I just loved Coulson's last words in this, though. This was never going to work unless they had something to... And obviously you fill in the blank with avenge. Because they are the Avengers. And it's like, yes, Coulson gets it. He's a necessary casualty to make them all pull together. That's fine. Yeah. I'm going to so die Coulson, with applause. It's okay.
Yeah. No. Coulson dies. Enraged by this, Thor attacks the cage and in doing so is released to fall to his imminent death.
Dead.
Many feet below.
Oh, wait, no, he's a god.
But then it was designed to kill the Hulk. So
no, it was designed
knows.
To contain the Hulk, not kill him. You can't kill the Hulk.
Not necessarily kill him.
But logically, if you're going to contain the Hulk in this cage and then drop the cage, if you drop the cage, it's going to smash into 1,000 bits. If that doesn't kill the Hulk, then all you've done is let the Hulk free.
Well, yep. We saw once Bruce had, once the Hulk rather had fallen in this scene, he was Banner by the time he woke up. So if that's the point to achieve, it's knocking him out so that he turns back into Banner.
This is true. There might be the plot. I think it was just a plot device, wasn't it? Whilst all this is happening, Barton manages to turn off another of the engines, which means that they are now on 2 out of 4 and are rapidly falling to the ground. Iron Man and Captain America battle to get the engine restarted by clearing off all of the debris and then spinning around and around and around to jumpstart the engine. Again, I don't know how that works, but fine. Movie magic.
Just go with it. Any kind of science in this, just go with it.
Yep.
Yeah. And as you said, we have Barton and Black Widow fighting and managing to clear Clint Barton's mind control by obviously just hitting him in the head very hard.
In doubt, give it a whack. Yes.
Yep. That's how you get rid of all mind control.
Yes, it is. Yes.
Just hit someone in
just
the head.
Don't hit
hard.
Him on the head again, or he might revert back again. You
exactly.
Know,
yeah, I'm not sure how that works.
Maybe she should have punched him in the heart because that was where it went in.
Science.
Mm, possibly.
Mm.
Yeah.
It goes in.
I don't know.
The heart
I mean,
the
whole
the head.
Yeah.
The whole scepter to the heart didn't work very well for Coulson, so who knows?
The whole fake system.
Coulson is now dead and stays dead for at least the rest of this movie.
Yes. Stays dead up until he's the main character in a new series. Yay!
Fury uses this as an excuse to get the remaining Avengers, so at this point, just Tony and Steve
could gather there was something fishy with Coulson there, though, because they said, oh, we'll dispatch a medical team to Coulson, just as there were blokes carrying Coulson away. And Fury's like, no, no, don't worry. I've got that covered already.
Yeah.
It's not a medical team. It's a different team for my different purposes. So there was a little hint of the something slightly fishy there that in hindsight you can go, oh, yeah.
So Fury talks to Rogers and Tony Stark and throws the Coulson's as no longer mint trading cards at
He took them out
Steve
of the
Rogers.
Wrapping.
Covered in blood.
Covered in blood and
know,
yeah,
those
that was...
will go for like just, diddly squat on eBay now.
They're somewhat less sanitary,
One of
certainly.
The pictures on those little cards was the picture that was on the cover of the first Captain America comic.
Ooh, nice.
Trivia.
Fun facts.
So this is kind of the kick up the backside that they need to sort of become the Avengers.
I feel like this was a real kind of, hey, I'm going to pitch the whole kind of idea of avenging and this whole team name, and I'm pitching this to the Avengers. No, there's only two of you here.
And Stark knows all about this anyway because he's been sort of in from near the start because he was told about the Avengers initiative at the end of Iron Man 1.
Yeah.
So. Elsewhere in Medical Bay, Barton is coming round and says he doesn't know where Loki is, but he knows he will attack soon. Captain America and Iron Man bicker about what to do. Then Stark has the realization that he's not the only diva in the room, and actually Loki's going to use Stark Tower as his base. Again, it was convenient. I don't quite see why that was there, but yeah, we'll go with it. It's movie magic. So Rogers and Tony Stark and Romanoff and Clint Barton steal a Quinjet.
Well, I liked the way that Clint was getting, you know, the best possible medical care on the ship as well. Of
what, being
Natasha.
chained to a bed and, you know, Natasha standing over him talking to him.
Yeah, like, there were no actual medical personnel there at all. This is like one of their high value assets. And that's it. It's just Natasha, no one else.
Maybe she booted them out because she wanted to have a moment with her BFF.
Possibly. I did like the way that they got onto the Quinjet and one of the technicians says, you're not allowed to be on there. And Captain America just looks at him and goes, don't, son.
Yeah, just don't.
Just don't. No, it's not worth it. So they all fly off and we see a shot of Maria Hill and Nick Fury going, you see, told you that would work. Yeah. Pretty much.
Went those cards in his locker. Yeah, covered them in fake blood, a bit of ketchup, you know, yeah.
I know, this is the worrying thing, it's Nick Fury. He probably went to the corpse and just smeared them all over.
Oh, gross.
Well, because he did in the Lego thing.
Yeah, I'm going to go with ketchup instead.
Ketchup.
Okay, that's probably safer. Yeah. Back on Stark Tower, we have Selvig, who activates the portal on the roof and begins... Well, it activates the device on the roof, which opens a portal to space, apparently. But it's fine. But it doesn't actually open a portal to space, because if it did, all the air would rush out and everybody would die.
It's a wormhole.
Well, let's not go into that one. It's something. It's weird that
it's,
way.
It's magic.
It's like comic book science.
Any technology sufficiently advanced will appear as magic. It's magic. Because it's very advanced technology, we couldn't possibly understand it with our current scientific understanding, but it works, as we just saw, you know.
Tony tries to blast the device but fails because it's protected by a barrier, so instead he goes with plan B, which is confronting Loki, and also while he's at it getting himself a shiny new armor.
I have an army, we have a Hulk.
And at this point, Loki tries to control Tony by pinging him on his heart. But obviously, Tony's heart is made of metal.
Yay, comedy moment.
Well, it's not, but the thing around his heart is made of metal.
This usually works.
Yeah. Performance issues. which was amusing.
Joe's dirty laugh right there.
That is just such a that guy.
It's an amusing scene, but it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense.
Oh, yes, it totally does.
Tony's thrown out of the window and his special Mark 7 suit, or Mark 17, I can't remember. Whatever Mark it was.
He's got a lot of them.
Special suit flies out after him and manages to catch up with the falling Tony Stark and get itself wrapped around him just before he hits the pavement.
And burns the faces off the people that were stood on
the pavement. Yes, he has to land on these people by this hot dog stall and then fires up his jets and flies off. But yeah, it's got to be fairly hot for the people standing underneath
them. No, it's cold fusion. It's blue.
Burns their faces off. They just don't show that.
Burns their faces off. Add to the death list.
We don't know if they
die,
though.
So the portal's been open.
We don't see them actually die on screen, so they're not on the body.
They might just spend the rest of their lives horribly disfigured.
Yes, yes. What happened to you,
Tony Stark?
Yes, but
they'll still live happily ever after. Yada, yada, yada.
So the portal's opened and streams of Chitauri warriors flow through the portal and into the skies of New York.
Yay! And Tony's like, oh yeah, he mentioned an army, didn't he? I guess that's probably what this is.
Probably should do something about this. So he flies up and starts to blow things up as much as possible. We switch to an abandoned warehouse, thankfully abandoned warehouse, and we see Bruce Banner naked and on the floor of a collapsed building.
I'd forgotten this scene, and I'd forgotten how much I love this scene and how this is the best scene and it has the best person in it. Go on.
Yes, because he is greeted by the late, great Harry Dean Stanton, who throws a pair of trousers at him and asks him if he's an alien.
That's so cool.
It's like, I didn't know whether these would fit you until you, you know, shrunk down to a smaller size.
I know, like, dude is so chill.
Yeah.
And just, like, nice. It's just a lovely scene.
And I think there was, I vaguely remember seeing there was a deleted scene or story was a deleted scene that was how he then gave Banner the motorcycle that he sees later.
Oh, nice.
But again, that was missed out.
I wish we had an entire movie about that guy, but obviously we can't now because sad reasons.
Yeah. But, you know, like, the dude's seen aliens before, so,
This is true. The dude's been killed by aliens before, so he should be fully up for it.
It's in case the listeners don't know, he was in Alien.
We see a Quinjet heading towards New York with Romanoff and Barton. They attack the Chitauri and have Tony Stark in his new Iron Man shiny outfit lead them across the front of the guns, where they fire at the Chitauri but hit lots of buildings behind. However, once again, a flying vehicle is shot down by a Chitauri. Thankfully, our plucky crew survive, and they make their way to walk back towards Stark Tower, but are stopped by hordes of attacking Chitauri.
Why do I remember this in Lego?
Yeah. It's like Budapest all over again.
Oh, we remember Budapest quite differently.
Yes, but that's because it was a stag deer and I was really drunk.
I'm so mad that we never got like to find out what the heck went down in Budapest.
It's so much better to just leave it as a mystery.
Did they get pastries? Because, man, the pastries are nice. This is my Hungarian bias showing, I realize this, but...
So they decide that Rogers needs to go and warn people that things are happening, although I think that's fairly obvious at this point. So parkours his way across town, things exploding conveniently to push him forward all the while.
Movie magic.
And then, yay, big space whale aliens appear.
I wrote space worm turtle ship thing, but I think they're called leviathans.
Leviathans!
I think I mentally just wrote Lego.
Turtle, what did you describe
space
it as?
Space worm turtle ship thing.
I'll go with that. That sounds good, slightly long-winded.
No, it's perfect.
Tony Stark distracts the leviathan and draws it towards the rest of the happy gang. At this point, Bruce Banner turns up on a motorcycle.
Yay! Thor rocks up before Banner, though. Thor turns up, then Banner does.
Oh, yes, Thor turns up and then Banner does. You're right, yes.
And we finally learn what Banner's secret is.
Banner's secret is indeed...
I think it's time that you got angry. That's my secret.
I'm always angry. Which makes no sense, but
it makes no sense. No sense at all, but it sounds good.
So Bruce Banner turns into the Hulk and punches the space whale in the face.
And then we get the panning shot where they're stood in a circle, all of the Avengers, so that they can use this one shot in every bit of promotional material for the film.
Yep. Even watching it, you did think, oh yeah, that's the promotional
shot. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it didn't seem natural. It didn't fit in at all with what they were doing.
No, it is just we are doing this and standing, posing heroically so that we can use this in posters and trailers and all that jazz.
You know,
that
what would be amusing is if they all got shot while they were standing around doing nothing and not paying attention.
I want to say it's not true because I want them all to survive and live to do other movies that were even better than this one.
Well, they're superheroes, so they wouldn't die.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the scene from The Two Towers we looked at a few weeks ago where we have they all ride out on their horses near the end and then Gandalf turns up and everybody stops to look at Gandalf and no one gets stabbed while they're occupied by Gandalf. It's a similar sort of situation.
Cinematic license in it.
So we get sort of several scenes of fighting and shooting and flying.
Don't miss out one of the best lines of the whole movie. Because Cap finally goes... Oh yeah, my name's Captain America, so I'll do that whole taking charge thing. And he tells people where to go, and then he comes to the very last person, and it's Hulk, and he just goes, Hulk!
Smash!
Smash!
Hulk
and
smash!
And it's like, yes! That was good.
Yay, well done, you. You are...
Hulk smash!
You're never actually made a captain, it's just your name as a USO presenter.
He takes it literally.
So yes, they're fighting, there's more space aliens and more space worm...
Space worm turtle ship things.
Space worm turtle ship with a P things, just to qualify.
Ship, yep. Anyways.
We have a slightly silly scene of Black Widow jumping on the back of one of the chariots and controlling it to fly after... I'm not sure why she's doing it to others to get
she's
back up on.
She's chasing after...
Loki.
Oh, no, she's wanting to get... She knows she needs to try to close the portal, so she's trying to get up to where the portal thing is.
Yeah, she's trying to get to...
And we hear Maria Hill tell Nick Fury that the council are on. So they're getting in touch, the Shadow Council.
I finally noticed that something's happening in New York. Yeah. I thought they'd better give them a call. Yeah. Black Widow is on a chariot. She's being chased by Loki. She gets Hawkeye to shoot an arrow at Loki to stop him. Loki, being the overconfident person he is, just catches the arrow out of thin air.
He smirks beforehand, though. He catches it.
He smirks, and then it explodes. Yeah. It literally explodes in his face.
Yep.
Yeah. Which blows him down conveniently onto the steps of Stark Tower.
Yep.
We have Black Widow then jumps off the chariot and lands also on the roof of Stark Tower, where we see Selvig has finally come round because he was knocked unconscious earlier and conveniently mentions that, oh yeah, by the way, I might not have known what I was doing, but I did put in a failsafe. And if you thrust Loki's sabre into the cube, it'll all stop.
Scepter.
Yes, scepter. Loki's
pokey thing that starts with an S.
if you poke Loki's scepter into the cube, then it'll close the portal.
Can we please like rephrase that line, because it just sounds very wrong.
Shove? No. Thrust? No.
Penetrate?
I think thrust is a good choice. Let's stick with thrust.
I'm not sure there's a good way to phrase it once your mind has gone there.
Yeah, my mind hadn't gone there at all. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Lowering the tone.
Of course.
We see a brief but nice scene of the Avengers fighting with each other as it goes to against each other. So we have Thor using lightning and then Iron Man using Cap's shield to deflect beams and then the Hulk flying around and... apparently this was one of the scenes that nearly didn't make the final cut, but Joss Whedon really fought to keep it in there because it showed them fighting as a cohesive unit, which is makes sense, really.
Cooperation.
So yes, we have the World Council who have decided finally to do something, and the thing they're going to do...
Blow up
that's
the
right,
world.
They're going to send a nuclear bomb and blow up New York.
That's the stupidest thing.
Yeah.
It's not really proportional and not sensible, is it?
So. I think they're
getting invaded
going...
by aliens.
Yeah, I think they're just, you know, excreting in their pants at this point, and they just want to hit a button and it all be over.
Yeah. So they order that a fighter is launched from the helicarrier, despite protestations by Nick Fury that that isn't going to happen. And a fighter is launched that is shot down by Nick Fury.
He just grabs a bazooka from nowhere and he shoots
an RPG, and he managed to hit a fast moving plane. That is quite impressive for a man with one eye. But a second plane also takes off.
One eye, in fairness.
Yeah. A second plane takes off and heads towards New York.
Everybody dies.
We then get the very amusing scene of Loki and Hulk, where Hulk attacks Loki. Loki gives him a speech, but halfway through the speech, he gets grabbed and splatted quite
heavily.
It's
like
dumf,
puny god.
That was so cute.
That was one of my favourite scenes.
Fun fact, when they were filming that, so in order to simulate Loki being grabbed by Hulk, then Tom Hiddleston had a rope tied to his leg. So he knew that during his speech he was going to get yanked through this, but he didn't know at what point it was going to be at.
Sensible. So he's not basically, he's not bracing for it. He is, you know, this going to happen.
Exactly.
At some point.
That is great.
All right, I've got another fun fact about the nuke. When the fighter jet pilot person says that they've launched the nuke, it's now on its way. 2 minutes and 30 seconds. It is 2 minutes and 30 seconds in the film from that launch to when the nuke goes off in the film.
Nice.
They do that in real time.
That's good because I like that when that happens because it keeps it. Sort of
well, except when they did it in Titanic and it was, 2.5 hours of people running around like headless chickens.
Yeah, you don't always have to do things in real time. But if it's only like
when it's a short enough distance
long,
of time.
Yeah.
If it's like 10 seconds or like 2.5 minutes, that's fine. But if it's 2 hours,
if you're
then
making
no,
a movie about a 9 hour event, it doesn't have to run in real time.
So Stark intercepts the missile and manages it to turn its course and send it through the portal towards the Chitauri warships. The bomb explodes, and because this is movie land, as soon as the mothership explodes, all of the aliens suddenly collapse.
The aliens have been watching Star Wars.
Yeah. It's like, we can't do anything without power from
the mothership.
The mothership, so we're just going to collapse for no apparent reason.
It was super handy.
It was convenient, and it's one of those movie conceits that really annoys people.
But I prefer that to a really long, drawn-out trying to kill all the ones that are left through the portal and that going on for another 45 minutes.
Yeah, true. So the bomb explodes, and the portal is
They can close the portal, but they're waiting for Stark to return. But when it becomes obvious that Stark isn't going to return, Captain America orders Natasha to close the portal, which she does by thrusting her long staff into the meaty part of the device.
Thank you, sweetheart.
I'm just shaking my
head. Natasha
here.
Does by... which Natasha closes the portal by thrusting the staff.
Scepter.
That's no better, is it?
She sticks the spear in the hole.
she shows.
Joe,
she uses
the worst
Loki's
one.
Tool.
She uses. there's no way of doing this, is
no,
there? Now that's it.
No, everything is ruined.
I was trying to do it in a fairly dirty way, and then I was going to do it again as a clean way, but I don't actually think I can do
no,
a clean way.
No. Nope. Sorry.
So the portal is closing,
she
but as the portal
before thrusting the weapon, no, it's no.
Anyways.
Anyways. So the portal begins to close, but Tony Stark is falling back towards Earth because obviously in space there's gravity.
Well, I'm presuming the Earth's gravity through the portal is what's drawing him down, that you can feel the effects of Earth's gravity through the portal. I'm filling their plot hole for them.
Because yeah, magic.
Now that is a little bit of a science. Plot hole. But as I said, movie magic. So just as the portal closes and the blast from the nuclear device hits the camera, Stark falls through the portal and plummets towards the Earth.
Oh, heck.
And they all stand on the ground going, oh, yay, look, he made it, watching him plummet down.
He's not. He's not.
Captain America swearing and everybody's shocked by Captain America swearing, so they ignore the fact that Stark's falling to his death. Thor notices something's happening and starts to spin up his hammer to fly over towards him. But then, no, it's fine, because science buddy
Hulk
saves
the day! Saves
him.
Yay. Yay.
Boom!
Not science only smash, boys. Hulk also catch.
Yeah.
And then Hulk roar and wake him up.
Yes.
But in
which
the...
an ad lib by Mark Ruffalo when he was doing the motion capture stuff.
In the Lego game, Hulk gives him mouth to mouth, which is just funny.
Yeah, they should have done that in the film as well.
Yeah, that would have been cute.
Though I do like that when he wakes up, he does immediately say, did anyone kiss me?
Yeah, because why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And then we get the first mention of the most important point in any of these films, which is, of course, shawarma.
Which was an ad-lib by Robert Downey Jr. as well.
Never had shawarma, but, you know, it's obviously a big thing if you're an Avenger.
I have a fun fact about that.
Tell us about shawarma.
I'm just going to read what I've got for the whole thing rather than trying to pick out this. So the final,
yeah, okay.
So they did that final post-credit thing with the shawarma because of the reference that he says originally when he woke up, he was supposed to wake up and say, what's next? But they rewrote it from an ad-lib idea and said about the shawarma instead. And so because of the whole shawarma thing that they added, they added that post-credit scene a day after the global premiere. So it was like that last minute. And Chris Evans was filming something else where he had a beard and he had to have like a prosthetic jaw and stuff like that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's why he's got his hand over his jaw the whole time and not eating, because he's got this weird prosthetic jaw on.
I know that scene didn't make it. It wasn't in the original UK release of the film.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because it was only on the DVD.
So the shawarma sales, specifically in LA, St. Louis, and Boston, skyrocketed after that. So it did have an actual real-world impact on shawarma.
Like, the Avengers Assemble, sponsored by shawarma.
I don't know why those
specific roasted, delicious meat sandwiches.
So they decide that they probably shouldn't go for a shawarma joint just yet, because we've still got Loki upstairs in the top of Stark Tower. So they all pile up there to arrest Loki.
Where he's been lying there after his little bounce around with the Hulk for quite a long time, because it's at that point that he then kind of comes to.
But he is still decidedly, you know, not 100% with it, because he is crawling to sort of try and get away.
It was convenient, that timing, though.
Very convenient. So, yeah, Loki is arrested and everybody lives happily ever after. Or at least that's what you'd think from the music, because at that point you get a kind of twee acoustic guitar music happening, which is a sort of the post-credit, not the post-credits, but the post-script part of it. You see more World Council, where they talk about what will happen next time, and that the fact that the Avengers were there as a deterrent and as a warning. And while we're listening to this, we see Thor and Loki return to Asgard with using the portal that is created by the energy of the Tesseract. Tony and Bruce drive off together because they are science bros.
They are. It's so heartwarming.
Yeah, and Captain America rides off on a bike because he's bike bros or something.
Because he's America personified. Yeah.
On a bike without a helmet. That's just silly.
He is a reckless boy who I think at this point probably like low-key kind of wants to die, which is why he takes a lot of unnecessary risks.
So that's pretty much the end of the film. We have a few scenes. Well, hang on. We have a few scenes of TV reports of what's happened, including a quick shot of Stan Lee that was apparently put in late because his original cameo was cut from the film.
No!
Not sure what his original cameo was, but that's why he was done in that sort of near the end of it cameo, because he was apparently supposed to be doing something else, but that wasn't kept in.
I did read what his original cameo was and I've forgotten because I take in that many facts for this podcast.
So that's pretty much the end of the film. We obviously then get the mid-credits scene, which is the most confusing thing to anybody, because we have the other speaking to Thanos. This unknown leader.
Which is Thanos, right? And,
Thanos.
Well, it is Thanos, but at this point in time, 99.9% of anybody watching these films did not, and myself included, have a clue who Thanos was.
Well, I knew who it was.
It was this big purple
dude. Planet Eater.
Thanos.
But yeah, but did you know that at the time, Joe? Or did you just, you know, is this something you've found out since then? Because I didn't know. I had to go and Google to find out who it was supposed to be and then look at the backstory.
Patrick told me, because we watched it
together. I think most people watched it and were like, hey, it's a mystery dude.
Yeah, it's like, who is this person? Why are they talking about death?
Well, what they've always done with the post-credit things is that you don't need to actually know who the people are, and it's kind of stuff that's there for a nod to people who do know the comic stuff to be able to go, that person!
Yeah. And then, obviously, at the very end, as we've already discussed, we have the
Shwarma.
Scene of everybody sort of looking completely worn out and slowly sort of trying to eat shawarma. With the exception of Thor, who's just piling it in.
On-screen body count, including the Chitauri. Anyone want to make a guess?
47.
Higher.
Well, hang on. Are we talking about all the Chitauri that died because they cut the power?
147.
On-screen. So any that died on-screen.
I'm going to say 120.
Sam, are you going to have a guess?
297,416.
It's good, but it's not quite right. Dang. 151.
Ah!
Body count in this one, 151. So very close there, Joe.
That's not too bad, considering there's an awful lot of scenes where there was lots of firing, but no one actually got hit or died.
Yeah,
it's like stormtroopers.
That's one thing that struck me about the main assault by the Chitauri in New York. They just couldn't hit anything.
Yes.
Stormtroopers.
The only thing they actually hit at any time was the Hulk. No one else got hit. It was just a bit ridiculous.
So this was the first MCU film that hit the magic $1 billion.
Yes, because didn't this make like $1.5 billion worldwide?
Let me see. I've got the stats right here.
Which I think still makes it less than, you know, it's still only two-thirds.
Worldwide it made $1.5 billion. At the time, it was the third highest grossing worldwide ever after James Cameron's two. But since then, it's been surpassed by Force Awakens and Jurassic World.
So that is the first Avengers film, be it either The Avengers or Avengers Assemble, depending on where you are in the world.
But it was like the seventh MCU film.
It was, yes, indeed, because we have all of the previous ones.
Okay,
fine.
Oh, hang on. It was the sixth one of Phase 1, but of course, prior to Phase 1, we had the Incredible Hulk movie, which does count. So yes, seventh.
I think I had seven in my box set.
It wasn't this film, it was the second Avengers film where I walked out and behind me someone said, and I quote verbatim, I hadn't realised I had to do homework to watch this film.
Yeah.
Because it just got to the point where it's so dense in backstory and lore that actually, if you've not done all the homework, if you've not seen all the films, then you're going to be as confused as Daisy was watching The Two Towers.
Honestly, I remember, I think around the time that The Avengers came out, I was concerned that, and I expressed this at the time, that are these movies going to sort of continuity-wise get stuck so far up each other's backsides that you're going to have to have, like, done homework in order to, you know, sort of watch the next one. Because that's the problem that I had for years with the comic books, is that, like, I don't know where to be able to just dive in and enjoy this, because how many other things will I have to have read first in order to understand, like, anything that's happening here?
And despite how many people now feel about Joss Whedon, he did a good job of, as I said, taking that balanced line between being far too expositional and actually requiring you to do far too much homework, at least in this movie. I don't think that was quite the case in the second Avengers movie, but with this one, certainly, I don't think there was that much of a need for, you know, a detailed knowledge of what was happening in the other films that happened.
No, but if you had watched the previous six recently, then some of it was a little bit of, oh, I'm sure that's a nod, but I've no idea what's going on. I'm a little confused.
But not knowing what's going on didn't necessarily mean that you couldn't follow what was happening in the film itself. Yeah. So
I think this was very much the cinematic sort of gateway drug for a lot of people getting into superhero business.
Yeah. So that was Avengers Assemble, or if you're American or just not in the UK, The Avengers. Final thoughts on this one, Joe? Final thoughts?
Hulk smash, puny god.
Fair enough. And Daisy?
For me, this movie was made not by the plot and not even by the action sequences. It was the funny dialogue moments. And I think that was the kind of best stamp of Joss Whedon on this movie. There are a lot of just really funny little dialogue moments between characters, between lots of them, throughout this movie. And those are the bits that have stuck with me from it. And those are the bits that every time I see it, I enjoy the most.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was very Weldon-esque in many ways. Sammy, final thoughts?
I think it's a good introduction / gateway drug to the world of Marvel Avengy stuff. Not my favorite of the movies by a long stretch, but most of it is fine and fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a fun movie. There were plot holes and there were things that didn't quite work, but I enjoyed it watching it at the cinema, and I enjoyed watching it last night on the TV. So yeah, pretty good. Next, we have a slight tonal shift in that we have 1990s Ghost, starring Patrick Swayze and Demi Moore, I'm going to say. As you may tell, I've never seen this film. I've never seen this film, so this is going to be a first for me. So hold on to your hats for that one, because I'm sure I'm going to love it.
I'm sure you will.
But until then, I'd like to thank my fellow podcast crew for watching and hopefully enjoying The Avengers. I would like to thank Joe.
Bye.
I would like to thank Daisy.
Thank you.
And as always, I'd like to thank my lovely wife, Sammy.
Thank you, sweetheart.
And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this little adventure. And goodbye.
We'll catch you in 2 weeks' time.
Bye.
Catch you in 2 weeks' time. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Home Movie Club, part of the That Podcast Thing Network. Find us on Twitter at podcast_thing. And on Facebook by searching for That Podcast Thing. Please like and subscribe for news of our future episodes coming soon.